Hi guys, and welcome to a very special bonus episode of The Bitter End with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
It's a bonus!
Extra points.
Extra points. So Tom and I are on our mid-season break at the moment, but just for you, we've got a very special interlinking Easter egg episode, which is this one that you are listening to right now with your own ear holes. This is our very, very first interview with someone who was intimately involved with a Bitter End franchise.
It's taken a while trying to get somebody, and boy, did we get somebody.
Because we got a two for one. We got someone who is in a Highlander film and also in a Friday the 13th film from season one. We got Rusty Schwimmer. Rusty Schwimmer plays the character of Joey B in Friday the 13th Part 9, Jason Goes to Hell the Final Friday, and she also plays the character of Drunk in Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. So Tom and I had a chat with Rusty on Skype and asked her all the questions that you would have wanted us to ask her. And she was unbelievably lovely, wasn't she, Tom?
She was great. She was an absolute diamond.
What a tornado of a lady. And her acting credits are crazy, guys. She's been directed by Steven Spielberg. She's been directed by Steven Soderbergh. She's appeared in Desperate Housewives, Heroes, Without a Trace, CSI, The Gilmore Girls, 6 Feet Under, The X-Files, ER, Tales from the Crypt, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Is there anything that Rusty Schwimmer has not been in?
I don't think so. She was also in Candyman.
She was in
Candyman.
The Candyman. So yeah, without further ado, I guess we'll let Rusty speak for herself. Here is Rusty Schwimmer.
I'm Rusty Schwimmer, and I'm an actress. I was in both Highlander 2 and Friday the 13th Part 9, Jason Goes to Hell.
Yes. What monolithic movies those both are.
I mean, because we've been watching all these, those are two that really, they really do stand out.
maybe not for the good, but they do stand out, yes.
They're definitely very interesting films in the canon of both of these franchises. You know, I know that maybe they're a bit divisive for some people, but like they really leave an impact, and I think that is important in films.
Yeah,
sure. I do love the fact that you described them as interesting. So
I think that Highlander 2 is a fascinating film. And
really?
Yeah, I really do. It blew my mind when I watched it. Like, I just couldn't quite get my head around it, and I loved it for that. And when we recorded the podcast for where we talked about Jason Goes to Hell, I just had basically like nearly a full mental collapse while we were talking about that film.
Maybe on any of the multiple times that Jason has come back from the dead and killed everybody, you should have dredged the fucking lake. He was down at the bottom of that fucking lake.
Tom.
Why didn't they bring him back? Why didn't they go like, oh, all these people have died, but somebody has just said, we've got no proof that this one surviving person didn't kill everybody. They said, oh, it was Jason Voorhees. Where is he? At the bottom of the lake. Should we look for him? No. We'll just fucking take it on face value that this person, well, they seem pretty sad. I can only assume they didn't kill everybody. What the actual fuck?
Not because of you, I might add. Your performance that sent Tom over the edge.
No. Joey B was a shining light in that movie, I have to say.
Joey was supposed to be a guy.
I read about that. What happened there?
Well, what really happened, and I think it's in the Crystal Lake Memories, I'm not sure, but what happened is I always wanted to be in a horror film because my best friends and I in high school would go to see all the horror films. We loved Halloween. We were obsessed with Halloween, and I think we saw it about 25 times in the theater. And so when this came up, my manager said, oh, here's your horror film, but it's for a guy, but I think that you can do this. I read it and I thought it was so funny. It made me laugh so hard. And I said, please get me in there. And they wouldn't see me. They wouldn't see me. They said, it's a guy. He's rough, this and that. And my manager was very, she's very stubborn. And she said, look, the 5 minutes you're going to see her is a hell of a lot less time than the 40 calls a day that you'll be fielding from me. So you might as well see her. And I walked in and they were kind of, nonplussed. They thought, whatever. And I kind of was playing with them because I walked in all sweet and Midwestern, which is very, oh, hi, how are you? How's it going? And they thought, what are we, why are we seeing her? And then I decided to do my best friend's father, to imitate him. And he was a gruff guy with the Chicago accent. And I decided to portray it that way. Sean Cunningham was laughing so hard that he made me do it again because he couldn't believe what he was seeing. So I guess I earned a fan in Sean Cunningham. And then they had me read with a whole bunch of other guys, including Leslie Jordan. And Leslie and I just played and played and had a great time. And that's how it came to be.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah. that you got to finally be in your horror film. I mean, you must have been. I know you're also in Candyman as well,
yes.
Right?
And the if you can see the common denominators there of Highlander 2 and Candyman, that's also with Virginia Madsen, who happens to be that best friend that I was just telling you about, okay. Imitating her father.
That is an amazing fact.
That's great. Yeah.
Joey B is Virginia Madsen's father.
Yes, exactly. She and I grew up together, and just pure luck and fortune that both of us are able to make a living as actresses and do that. And she's still my bestie.
Aww.
She's still my BFF. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
so when you were the most notable thing for me about Joey B in Jason Goes to Hell is got to be the death. It's got to be your face smashed death scene.
The silver medal kill goes to Joey B, who owns the diner, Joey B's
Joey
diner.
B.
And what happens to her is she gets punched in the chin, in the jaw, but there's this quite prolonged shot where it just shows her face with a smashed up chin.
Her face is collapsed in on itself,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, so it's almost as if like the whole lower jaw sort of shifted out of the joint upwards, and then her nose kind of goes inside out, and she just looks up at the camera, and she doesn't make any noise, and she's just like...
Yeah.
That's that. Like, I'm that's making the noises that it looks like her face is making, because she is silent, but it's like... She goes a bit like Beaker from The Muppets.
Yes. Oh, spot on.
Yeah. That is rank, mate.
What was it like filming that?
Well, I do remember at one point, I was very excited to die on screen. I thought, ooh, this will be fun. And I loved the idea that my face was smashed in, especially since my character was so annoying that, you know, with horror films, you really want to be able to cheer when someone dies. And that was my objective, was that the audience would cheer when I died.
Yeah.
Because I was so annoying. And I thought being punched in the face was probably the best thing. And it was a lot of fun because we were working on a set. It was actually in an actual building. It wasn't on a studio lot. And so we could, you know, just kind of run around the building, and it was all ours, and we were doing night shoots. And I remember Stephen Culp, who played at that point, the heart went into his body.
Yeah.
And Stephen Culp was the gentleman that was the newscaster.
American Case File. He was that guy.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. And I remember at one point I was hitting him, and you know, I wasn't hitting them that hard. I'm trained in stage combat, so I knew how to hit without being too hard. And he couldn't handle it. So
Joey B got too rough for him.
So you beat up Jason Voorhees essentially.
Just before he then pounds my face in. I had much more fun watching Leslie's face get put in a fryer. That was fun.
That was cool too. Was it the practical effects on your face? Did that take long to apply, or when you were smashed?
It is not my face. That is a dummy of me.
What happened to it? Did you get to keep it?
I didn't, which really bums my high, because I really, really would love to have it in like a corner of my living room, but I don't know where that is. It's probably in some makeup house, a special effects house somewhere. But I was amazed. I walked into the makeup trailer, and there was the torso and face of me. And I couldn't believe how they got the eyebrows so perfectly. And so that was pretty wild to see, but I don't know if you know the process of that. They pour this gelatinous type liquid that hardens over your face. And while they do that, the only way you can breathe is if they stick straws in your mouth and your nose, and then you have to just sit there very quietly. So anybody that's claustrophobic really has a hard time with it. I just thought it was cool.
Wow.
I mean, that's awesome that you got your horror wish. You got killed, because the worst thing must be being like booked to be on like in a slasher film and not die. That's like.
I mean, what's the point, right?
Yeah, exactly. You want to be in a film, you want to be like a bad guy or someone who gets killed. who wants to be the survivor?
Nobody.
Really does. I mean, that's the most boring part of any movie, is the one that is the survivor. Forget it, right?
Yeah. And if you're going to be in it, you might as well die. Were you much of a fan of the Friday the 13th series before you kind of got your way in? Was it just you wanted to be in a horror film, or had you been following the eight Friday the 13th films before that one?
To be honest, it was really only Halloween and a film that we were also, Virginia and our other best friend Jean and I were obsessed with, was Suspiria.
That's my favorite film.
Isn't that an incredible film?
It's a perfect horror film.
It is. And we would always imitate, you know, when the schoolgirls would be like, the mistress. And we loved that film. And so it was basically the Halloween franchise that I loved, and also Suspiria. I just love that. Friday the 13th, I of course knew about it. Who can't know about that? But not, you know, not a huge fan. I of course thought, oh well, they copied the hockey mask from Halloween, but it is a different deal. It's a different deal. I understand that now. To horror buffs, that is a different deal. So
and like on that movie, like, so what was kind of the atmosphere like making that? Because this was the first one of those that they'd made in a while. Like they'd gone from basically knocking those out at least maybe like one a year to having quite a big gap. So like it was kind of pitched as obviously being the last one, but then I think but then they put another film out I think the very next year. so you know, was everyone kind of like, okay, so if anybody asks, this is the last one? Or like what was the like kind of the atmosphere about the movie on set and stuff?
I think at that point they had a hint. I think if I'm correct in saying, the very end you see
Freddy Krueger's hand.
Yeah, Freddy Krueger's hand. So We knew something was up, and especially since Sean Cunningham had come back to the franchise, we knew that, you know, this is a guy that's very, very smart, and I'm sure he was looking to keep going with the franchise. But when you're filming it, you're not thinking that deeply. You're just thinking, how much fun can I have while I'm working?
Yeah. And it must be a fun kind of film to be doing when you're doing that kind of the slasher.
Yeah, I would. It just always, in every single one of those films, it always just looks like everyone's having an absolute ball to me.
Well, it does depend. Every single set, no matter what kind of movie it is, every single set is really decided. The fun is decided by how fun the producer is or how fun the director is. Mm. And Adam Marcus was just this young buck who wanted to have so much fun. I think he was just out of film school and was Sean Cunningham's protege. And so they were set to have so much fun. And that, to me, is one of my biggest reasons of why I do what I do, is because I can actually make a living having fun. I say to my friends all the time, I play dress up for a living, you know? And it was a really fun shoot, especially since Leslie and I were improvising like there was no tomorrow, and they allowed it. So we were thinking of really, really stupid things. When Dean, the writer, had written, "No one's going to touch that ray of sunshine," I had, or "No one's going to touch that baby," I think, was in the original script. And I said, "Nobody's going to touch that fucking ray of sunshine."
Classic Joey B.
Mm. I really like that. Also, like, I think my favorite bit about Joey B is, obviously, she's protecting the baby, but to begin with, she just sticks it in a Del Monte box out the back.
Exactly. She's like, it's going to be fine. You know?
And it kind of is.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, the baby made it through the film and Joey B didn't. So,
sorry, I was just going to say, on the subject of the script, were you at all surprised by, because this is the film that brings in the possession element of Jason Voorhees kind of like becoming extra supernatural and flying into other people's bodies and things like that. Was that a bit of a surprise when you read the script? Or?
Well, it really wasn't a surprise, because in horror films, anything goes. You can suspend disbelief in every way. And so when that happened, I just thought it was funny. I thought, oh, this is going to be hilarious. Especially since everybody had already been so used to that hulking body, you know, of Kane Hodder's body cruising around. And so it was kind of fun that it was in other people's bodies. I knew that would be fun for some people. I knew that there were some purists that were not going to be happy about it. But then again, like I said, I wasn't so invested in the Friday the 13th franchise. I thought that it needed a little bit of a satire, which it was. Mm. Almost, I Know What You Did Last Summer. Wasn't that a satire?
Yeah.
So. Or like Scream or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing with that film is that's the one that's got all those like references to other horror movies
Evil Dead,
in there.
And like props in there and stuff from John Carpenter films.
It's like, yeah, like the climbing frame from The Birds. It's all, you know, like it seemed like they were having a lot of fun with like what they could squeeze into that movie.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But what you were saying about like, obviously, like the it's like the director and the producer that make it fun on a movie set. I think that's quite a good point to ask you about Highlander 2, because there's a lot of the legend of the production of that film is quite a big one. So I'm just really interested to hear, you know, from someone who was there firsthand, was in the movie, just what was going on, because it sounded like everything that was going on.
Everything that could go wrong did. I haven't been in touch with what has been written about that. But I don't know if you are familiar with the fact that they had a bunch of classic cars that they accidentally blew up.
there are a lot of cars that do blow up in that. I mean, there's a good 5 minute section of explosions in that film, so I would not be surprised. But were they supposed to have returned those in working condition or something?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my god!
So I'm sure that took away about a quarter of the budget, right there.
Am I right? Was it filmed in? Was it in Argentina? The film.
It was Buenos Aires, Argentina. Unbelievable! It was fantastic.
Yes. Wow. So getting the part of drunk, as you're called in the in the credits, like how did that come about, and like getting out to Argentina?
It was, you know, once again in those early days for me, because that was what, 1990, I think, I don't know. I was still waiting on tables, so I was still a waitress then, and Virginia was going to Argentina. She was newly married at the time, and because her husband at the time was prepping a movie, he was a director then, she was going to go alone, and she didn't want to go alone, and she had it in her contract that she had, you know, some extra plane tickets, and so she said, why don't you come with me? And I thought, oh, do I have to? Kidding. I did go with her to Argentina. And while I was there, just having a blast with everybody, hanging out, there was most of the shoot was during nighttime, and night shoots can be really bizarre. And so we just spent a lot of nights just hanging out, and I was having a blast with Russell Mulcahy and the director, and he said, hey, we don't have any expats here, and we need to make this an American movie. Would you be willing to do a part for us? And of course, at that point, I thought to myself, oh, my God, of course. Of course, it was the first, I think it was the first thing I ever did where I had a full scene. So, of course, I'm horrified at my performance because it was very green, to say the least. So I stayed there, and I gave notice to my restaurant that I was working at by fax.
Ha!
And, stayed there and played with Christopher Lambert, and just had a really good time. But, you know, of course, it was nerve-wracking for me because it was my first type of role on film. So, you know, I had a few other things, but there were only two or three lines, you know, things like that. So to me, this was major, you know, major.
It's genuinely a bit of a scene-stealing performance. I mean that absolutely sincerely. I mean, your costume in that scene is incredible.
You know what? You are I absolutely agree. The costume designer on that shoot was amazing. Absolutely amazing. What was her name? Deborah? Maybe that was her name. She was unbelievable. And, you know, they don't have a lot of time to fit you. And they made this dress. And if I remember correctly, they fit me, you know, they took measurements, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And then I got there and it fit almost perfectly. And that's not easy to do, especially when they do it in 2 or 3 days' time. And so... that was, I loved that costume. It was so fun. I was just kind of bummed out that my scene was with Christopher rather than Virginia. We, you know, she and I always wanted to work together because we went to high school together. We studied acting together. But then, you know, a few years later we got to work together. So that was good.
Yeah.
But the one thing I do want to share about this is that I remember seeing the first Highlander and I was thinking, God, his eyes are so intense. He's so focused. Wow, it looks like he's seeing 1,000 miles away. And then I realized when I met him that he has the worst eyesight ever. And when he was not wearing his contacts, he had Coke bottles as his glasses. And I thought to myself, well, that's why he looks so intense, is because he can't see a damn thing. And so I remember that.
When you looked at the script, or you saw like Highlander 2, how did you feel about Planet Zeist and the whole alien aspect of it? Because that is the bit that blows my mind, and it's so beautifully weird. How did you feel about this at the time, being a fan and sort of like ending up on the film?
Well, you know, when I originally read it, it was basically just to, you know, help out Virginia, you know, just to help her out and to support her. There it is, to support her. And then and I read it and I thought, oh, okay, all right, let me see how that's going to work. And a lot of times, because I'm not a writer, I don't necessarily criticize the writing. I'm, as an actor, I always, my job is to justify it. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll see if I can justify it. And I never really judge it until I'm watching it, if I watch at all.
How was it, obviously, working with Christopher Lambert? Because from what I understand, he wasn't like super stoked to be necessarily doing the film, or was he having? I think he had some issues while he was out there, but was he having fun on set when you were there?
Well, you know, the thing about Christopher is there's a lot of actors out there, and not a lot, but there are some actors out there that are always looking for a good paycheck. And I'm wondering, and I don't know, and I'm wondering if that's why he did it, because they were offering him so much money to do it, especially since the original Highlander, which I loved, was such a hit. And, you know, there were times that he was cranky, especially since he was in that old man makeup. Especially for my scene, but luckily Christoph liked me, and so we were laughing and having a good time. I'm pretty easygoing. I'm not your typical heavy duty actor that needs to get into their moment, and so I keep it kind of light on the set, and I also take cues from the lead actor because I consider myself a guest at their party, and so if they're very intense, I just kind of ignore them, and then I mess around with the crew. but this time, you know, Christopher and I were laughing, but I know that he was physically uncomfortable on that. And we did have quite a few fabulous dinners. And at the time, he was married to Diane Lane. And Diane and I became friends then. And then, you know, what, 10 years later, we were doing Perfect Storm together. And so that was awesome. And she and I used to, we would, on days off, we would go antiquing and just have a great time. Yeah. And take a look at the antiques in Argentina and Buenos Aires. And it was great. So, you know, basically that answer to your question about Christopher, you know, all actors get cranky sometimes, especially when it's night shooting, especially when you're given prosthetics like that. It's not easy. It's not easy. But he was, you know, he was game when he and I were playing. So that's what I can say. I just know that there were a lot of missteps on the production side, and that can make a person cranky. You know, yeah.
On the subject of those prosthetics that he wears, because he really seems to be throwing his back into that scene specifically. I have to ask the question about his voice. He does this old man voice, which is unlike any old man that has ever lived on the face of the earth.
Oh, I just love you. Okay, yeah.
Was he practicing that off camera before? Did he work very hard on it? Did anyone mention to him that that's not what an old man sounds like?
If I remember correctly, because this was a long time ago, if I remember correctly, I think at that point, the last thing the production was thinking about was his voice. And I think at that point they were thinking about, you know, other things like how are we going to pay for all those cars we just blew up?
Yeah.
stuff like that. But I don't think, you know, this is, of course, just my assumption. But I don't think that he practiced it very, you know, diligently, if that's your, if that's the answer to your question. I don't think he was, hired ever to be Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, I just he's going to be that guy.
Hey, are you McCloud? Hey, I asked you a question. Are you McCloud?
Yes, I am.
Great. I always wanted to meet the guy that turned the world to shit.
Well, he saved our lives if you ask me.
I'm not asking you.
Okay. What do you want?
Did you ever think about that before you covered the sky with that puke?
Who are you?
Me? I'm nobody, all right? I work all day and my life stinks and it's your goddamn fault, you old bastard. Don't turn your back on me.
Hey.
Okay, Ms. Nobody, you're out of here. Come on, come on. Come on, come on. You're gone.
I'll see you again.
Anytime.
I just wanted to thank Rusty for taking the time to talk to a couple of schmoes like me and Tom.
Yeah. She was a real pleasure.
She is appearing in the upcoming film The Belko Experiment by James Gunn, which I am super excited about. By the time you listen to this episode, it may already have been out. But do watch out for Rusty Schwimmer in that, playing a slightly different character for her.
Mm.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode.
Yeah, we'll be back with you guys for season 3.
Bye!
Bye!